Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, this is a great time to give us a call at 1-800-462-7413. And as always, along with your calls, some interesting topics to talk about.
Yes, when you're living with somebody and maybe one person has good behaviors and one person has couch potato bad behaviors, who wins?
We'll find out. We can guess.
Where does the needle go?
Yeah.
And then we're going to talk about catchy cancers. We're going to talk about a new cancer that is catchy.
It's communicable?
A transmissible, transmissible cancer. We'll
coming
talk about
up.
That.
And our recipe?
Retro turkey loaf. Now, not all turkey loafs are retro, but this one is retro because it comes from
the vault. Again, it's 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. To the phones we go now, Zorba, and a listener with us in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
We sure appreciate it. How can we help?
Well, I'm calling because starting, I guess, last winter, my fingers started turning cold and just ghostly white and kind of tingly or numb. I get kind of fumble fingers because I lose a lot of the feeling in them. And at the time, I asked my family doctor about it, and he said, oh, don't worry about it. It's just from the cold weather. But it's continued through, you know, the 92, 95 degree weather. So I don't think it's the cold. And it's just intermittent. It's not all the time, but it can happen two or three times in a day, and then it'll go two or three days without doing it. And I just wondered if Dr. Zorba had any ideas.
Hilton Head, South Carolina, you never have cold weather.
We have a day or two.
A day or two, right.
Can I ask you, did this start in connection with some kind of behavior? Was there anything going on when this started?
I have not been able to pinpoint any kind of trigger. I'm a real estate agent, so I'm always under stress nowadays.
Yeah,
so
of course.
I've read some things on the internet about, you know, possibly being triggered by stress. There was something called Raynaud's.
That's right.
Raynaud's phenomena or Raynaud's syndrome. When I look at the pictures online of that, it looks just like what my hands do.
Right. And that actually is that is exactly what it sounds like. Raynaud's, and we'll talk about what can cause it, is where you've got some constriction of the little arterioles, little arteries in the fingers and the hands. We don't know what brings it on. Some pills, some medicines will do it, some pills. Sometimes it's associated with other diseases. Most of all, it just happens. And the treatment basically is, and like you know, your doctor said it'll happen in cold weather, but you're not exactly in Wisconsin cold weather. Let me tell you,
exactly.
We know in Wisconsin what cold weather is, and it ain't what's in Hilton Head. There's no doubt about that. But even slight changes in weather can make a difference. Going from outside where it can be, you know, hot, 95 or 100 degrees, and you go into air conditioning, that can actually cause it. Mm-hmm. Any differential in the weather can cause it. And frankly, the treatment is wearing gloves. I mean, you know, you're wearing gloves to actually cause is one of the treatments for this. And I know people who wear gloves in the house. You have a different set of gloves in the house and outside of the house, and they just always have gloves with them. And when they're bothered, they put on the gloves, and when they're not bothered, they don't. And there's certain things that tend to bother people, such as getting into a car and touching the wheel. You know, as soon as you touch the steering wheel in a car, for some people, that can bring it on.
I have noticed it several times in the car when I've just started to drive.
You start the car. Huh. That's exactly it. You put your hand on the steering wheel, and all of a sudden it triggers it. And the answer is you have a lot of gloves around. And they don't have to be expensive and good gloves. They can be gardening gloves from your local hardware store. But they're just there. And if you put your gloves on before you touch the steering wheel, you generally, for the most part, will not trigger Raynaud's phenomena. It's an interesting thing. So that's kind of the treatment. It's a non-pharmacological treatment. Now, I have heard of some success with acupuncture and Raynaud's, but unfortunately, you have to keep up with the acupuncture to actually make it work. And acupuncture, although it can be very effective, can also be costly.
Didn't gloves on women, wasn't that a fashion statement? They used to wear these longish gloves and these flowing.
That's exactly it.
Michael Jackson made them popular, too.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
There you go.
That's right. You either need a Michael Jackson glove or you need kid gloves that go up to your elbows.
If she does Michael Jackson, what's she going to do with her other hand? Thanks a lot for the call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for all your answers. I enjoy the show.
A pleasure.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. It, of course, is toll-free, and a line is open now for you at 800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up?
Well, it started back in April with my partner's. Well, what happened was he ended up having to leave work and going to the emergency room because he was falling over and throwing up and was diagnosed with an inner ear infection. Mm. And I've just kind of watched it kind of proceed into like a constant vertigo where he's always dizzy. And he went back into the doctor and they diagnosed him with something called labyrinthitis. And they said his inner ear is always going to be inflamed and it probably will never go away. And I was just wondering if you had any other comments on that.
How long has this been going on for?
Since April.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's going on for, first of all, labyrinthitis, there are a number of things that can make you dizzy. There's labyrinthitis, which often is a viral infection, goes away in a week or two. There's something called benign positional vertigo. And it can be treated effectively with something called Apley's maneuver. Did he go to a physical therapist or an occupational therapist at all?
No, he hasn't.
So I want to go back to this emergency room visit for a minute. This was in a big emergency room, a small hospital emergency room?
It was a big emergency room.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And did they say he should follow up with his family doctor or anything like that? Or they?
Yep, he went to his general practitioner after that. Uh-huh. And then she sent him to a specialist, an ear specialist.
Okay, so he ended up getting some good follow-up care. Who told him it was going to be there forever?
I don't, that's a good question.
Right.
I'm not sure. Right.
You know, it's hard. And he's how old did you say?
About 37.
So at 37, if you believe you're going to be dizzy forever, that's a tough diagnosis.
Yeah.
And my first thought is, why don't you get a second opinion? But I've got a thought before that because I'm giving you the second opinion.
Well, yeah, exactly. Two or three.
Yeah. Well, but if somebody says you're going to have this forever, what does that really mean? Yeah. What sort of test? Did he have an MRI of the brain to look at his brain?
No, they did not do an MRI.
Okay, so he really hasn't had a thorough workup on this
to
see. If it's been going on this long, I think he needs an MRI of the brain to make sure he doesn't have a tumor. He could have an acoustic neuroma, which is a type of a tumor in the inner ear that can actually cause dizziness. If he's still bothered, he can't go in the car. He's not had a complete workup unless he has that. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, a neurologist, some ENT doctors, but a neurologist also does an evaluation, which is called, it's called a nystagmometer or something. I can't remember the exact name, but basically they look at the nystagmus. When you go around in a circle and your eyes flutter, and we all did that as kids, and the eyes go back and forth and produce that, they reproduce it. And they look to see how your eyes are going to determine whether or not this is a problem with the ear or a problem with the brain. In other words, is this occurring at the organs that basically are the sensory organs in the ear that work on balance, or is there a processing problem in the brain? I don't think we know that from what's going on. The third thing I would recommend is there's something called Apley's maneuver. I think it's E-P-P-L-Y. We'll put it on our website, zorbapastor.org. We put it up before. And Apley's maneuver is done by physical therapists and occupational therapists, but frankly, you can do it at home. And the idea is that there are crystals in the ear and they get out of place. They're in these semicircular canals. They're not in the right canal. And you want to flip them out of the way. And the Apley's maneuver can help do this. And there's some instructions on how to do it. Mm-hmm. Physical therapists and occupational therapists are dynamite, and I would start that. But I don't think I would just accept this diagnosis. He has not had a full workup. Mm-hmm. He hasn't had Apley's maneuver, and the medication he's given isn't working. And if he can't ride in a car, he's disabled from it. You need a better diagnosis. Yeah.
Can I throw in an anecdotal thing?
Yes, please.
Can I ask you, does he work out?
No.
Is he really active?
He does. He rides his bike everywhere.
Yeah. I've been troubled with dizziness through most of my life and started working out, I don't know, a couple, 3 years ago. And that cured me. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any dizzy spells. Mm-hmm. Just, I suppose, the different kind of body positions, maybe somewhat similar to that.
Oh,
maneuver.
Yeah. No, I think sometimes it's get a relearning the blood of things. Yeah, I don't know what it is. But people who do some certain exercises, like Apley's maneuver or Tai Chi, can often overcome certain dizziness things because what you're doing is paying attention to which way your body is. But anyway, those are all of our recommendations. You've got your work cut out for you. Get these and call us back and let us know after he has this workup.
Okay, I will certainly do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we appreciate the call. Thank you so much. So, Zorba, couples living together, one has bad behavior, the other has good behavior.
Uh-huh.
So what happens?
Well, what would you expect, Tom? What do you think would actually happen?
Well, I would expect the bad behavior spouse would kind of control, and that the other spouse would then
and have good behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bad behavior spouse is going to say, "Hey, I'll work out with you." Guess what happens? It's exactly the opposite. This was a study where they interviewed about 120 people. They were heterosexual, lesbian, and gay couples. Mm-hmm. They were 40 years of age and older. They had a duration of a relationship between, roughly 15 and 25 years. And then they looked to see how their health habits were. And if one person exercised and the other person was the couch potato, the exerciser eventually became more like the couch potato.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
But the couch potato didn't really become the exerciser.
No, I know. I would never guess that.
I would have guessed exactly the opposite. I would have guessed the person who was the couch potato says, "You're right. I've got to go out. I've got to get my body in shape, and I've got to exercise more." Whereas you expected the person who exercised said, "You're right. Yeah, I don't have to do very much. I'll lay in front of the television set and watch the tube."
Yeah, my wife and I have kind of this thing going on where she's a very, very healthy eater.
Yes.
And I'm rather unhealthy eater. And the way we've adjusted to this, a lot of times we don't eat meals together.
Don't eat meals. Well, wait a second. So she hasn't developed your bad habits.
No.
She just doesn't
And
eat
I unfortunately
you.
Haven't developed her good habits. Yeah.
But now, wait a second. Look, what do you have for dinner every night? You have the same dinner.
We've gone over this.
I know, but we haven't. But you have a handful of nuts, which are omega-3
fatty acids.
Some nuts
and some yogurt and a banana and a little OJ and a can of V8.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's rather healthy.
That's right. And you have a little square of chocolate. And it turns out you have an exceptionally healthy dinner.
Yeah, but my lunch. You don't want to talk about
your lunch.
You don't want to see my lunch.
Healthy. That's right. I don't want to see your lunch. That's right. We can only let our viewers imagine what Tom's lunch is like. That's exactly it. And if they want to know what Tom's lunch is like, maybe one day we'll just take a photo of it and we're going to
put it on our website.
Tom's lunch on the website. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to follow him with the camera and we're going to put it on
the website. You don't need the website. Just drive along and see those big signs along the highway. There I am.
There we go.
1-800-462-7413. And a listener in Cranberry, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi, this is Andrew from Cranberry, New Jersey.
There's actually a Cranberry, New Jersey?
It's about a mile long, so it's easy to miss.
Do they have cranberry bogs there?
No, it's spelled differently and purely coincidental.
How do you spell cranberry differently than cranberry?
C-R-A-N-B-U-R-Y.
Oh, must have been Joe Cranberry started the town or something. How can we help?
Well, I have one problem that's probably linked to a second problem. I was diagnosed, or I went to the hospital because I had about a tennis ball-sized swollen gland on my left side. It turned out I have an 18-millimeter calcium deposit or a stone in my submandibular gland. And it became infected, couldn't eat or drink or had trouble breathing for about 3 days. When I finally got out of the hospital, the doctor I saw in the hospital said, without really looking at it, it's in there. There's nothing really we can do. I haven't really seen it. Are you free tomorrow? Let's do surgery. I'll go in through the mouth. It's kind of invasive. If we can't do it that way, we'll have to go through the neck. And there's a bunch of nerves there. You could, lose some feeling in your face. Are you free tomorrow? And I said, that sounds a little too risky. Went to another doctor. He said, if it doesn't bother you, keep it in. But I notice when I leave it in, I have to express the gland every now and then. And the only research I could really find was elderly women have this thing. And leads me to my second problem of bad breath. So I was wondering, have you ever heard of anything like this? And are there any kind of ways to mask bad breath?
Sure. Well, your bad breath may be from the gland, by the way. You know
yes.
that. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and if you have bad breath and it's from the gland, it implies that there's some inflammation. There might be a little infection,
okay.
you know, within there. And you obviously were having some symptoms. There is a prescription mouthwash called Peridex, P-E-R-I-D-E-X. And it's by prescription. It's used often for people who have halitosis or
yeah.
bad breath, but it's used. You have to get it by prescription. You've got to use them. You've got to brush your teeth afterwards because it can actually stain the teeth. It can be very, very effective for people with that. And you might want to consider using that, getting that from your dentist or getting from your doctor and seeing if that would work. That would be one initial episode to treat this acutely. But I think what you really want to do is you want to get some other opinions on how to get rid of this thing. This doesn't occur just in old women. I've had this occur in my office. Stones are a common thing. Big stone, I mean, this is a great big stone.
Oh, yeah.
So this is different. But they're not terribly uncommon. And you're not going to want to live with it for the rest of your life. So the real issue is, how do you fix it and how does it get treated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm not a big one for surgery or even prescription medicine for that case.
Right. But there may be a less invasive way of looking in through scopes, and that's what a number of ENT docs will do. So my recommendation is you've got to get another opinion within your plan. And what you want to do is you want to call up on the phone. You want to talk to the person at the office. You want to tell them what they have, and you want to say, how many of these has this doctor treated? And you don't want to go in the office if they say, yeah, I see one or two of these a year. Uh-uh. That's not what you want. There's someone in your plan who probably does a lot of them. Now, usually, if there's a university hospital that's associated with this, they often see the more difficult cases, you know, and that's, the, you know, they're more likely to get it. But you want to get on the phone and not bother with a visit to see who treats a lot of it. Now, one more thing. Let's say, for instance, you don't find anyone who's done more than one or two of these a year. You then want to write the medical director a call up and say, I want to get an out-of-plan evaluation of somebody who does a lot of these because I don't want to take a risk with my face and numbness that you have, and you want to get somebody who does a lot of them, and you want to go that extra step. Okay?
Is there a lot of, risk in surgery around the neck or in
the
neck?
There is always risk with surgery around the neck because there are lots of nerves there. So it's a riskier place than if you had a lump in the middle of your back, which is a less risky place. That's why you want to have the best surgeon that's going to do the least invasive procedure who does these a lot. That's what you want. You don't want somebody who does one a year. My goal is always, I do 20 of these a year. That's kind of the magic number that seems to be there. Now, 12 might be okay. One or two, no, I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
Good luck. Please let us know what happens, seriously.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
The call. Thank you. And Zorba, before we head out for a short break, it's time for a very quick edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. A listener named Jeff disagrees with your comments on smoking and stress. He writes, Hi, Dr. Zorba. My experience with smoking tells me you gave us an incomplete answer by saying smoking relieves the stress of being addicted to smoking. People also say they smoke to get revved up in the morning. It was explained to me that nicotine is a mood leveler. If you're excited, it calms you. If you're lethargic, it speeds you up.
Do you think that? I mean, come on. You used to smoke a pipe, and yeah. I smoked in college for
it
3 years.
It never revved me up.
You think it was
up.
A moon?
It never revved
no,
me up.
I
no.
mean, in other words, I
it
smoke
was very calming.
I mean, coffee revs me up.
Yeah.
Tobacco doesn't rev me
it
up.
It was very calming, very satisfying.
Yeah,
I want to start
that's
smoking
right.
again.
That's
just
exactly
thinking.
Smoking is an addictive behavior.
Yeah.
We use it. Now, it is true that when you smoke, because, I mean, I quit smoking back in 71 or 72.
Yeah.
Have I had an occasional cigar since that time? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I find is that it makes me dizzy, and it makes me sort of like, I feel kind of strange with it. Well, obviously, it affects me mentally.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can say it's a mood stabilizer, and it revs you up when you want to be revved up, and it calms you down when you want to be calmed down. I think it's an addictive behavior, and what happens is you take it all the time, and so whatever your mood is, you take it for that mood. That's the way it goes.
It doesn't rev you up, ever, I don't
ever.
Think.
Ever. It doesn't rev me up. Does smoking calm you down?
Yeah.
It did calm you down. Yeah. That's why you are the person you are today.
Yes.
Because you smoked a pipe. If it wasn't for a pipe, Tom Clark would be much less calm.
Okay. If some of Zorba's advice unlevels your mood, let us know for the next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send your rebuttal to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And if you think I'm just blowing smoke, let me know.
Well, we have our recipe coming up. It's a retro recipe, which we will explain. More of your calls, of course. Some more interesting research from Zorba. And, of course, our medical myth buster. You don't want to go away. Stay with us on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. Callers are waiting, but we have a line open now for you at 1-800-462-7413. Now it's recipe time, Zorba, and today we're going to go retro with another edition of Recipes from the Vault. Now, although the first time our recipe aired nearly 8 years ago, it was called Retro Turkey Loaf. So does that mean we now need to call it retro turkey loaf?
I think you're right. It's retro turkey loaf.
So let's hurry up and offer it up once more before it goes out of style and we have to wait for another 15 or 20 years before it's cool enough to share it again. One more time, here's the recipe for retro turkey loaf.
Retro turkey
loaf.
I have a question. Why didn't you say vault? You said vault. You didn't say vault.
Well, because I've said that the first time we had a recipe
from the vault.
Since that first time, you've stolen that.
That's right.
And so you always do that.
But I have a question. Why do we associate vault with zombies? I mean, that's what it is.
Well, it's deep and down and scary.
Yeah, but when I go to the vault, it's the bank vault, and that's on the ground floor.
Well, that's scary for me.
When I walk in there, it's not like, oh, my God, we're in the vault.
It is with me because there's very, very seldom anything in there that's worth anything.
That's true. Could be retro. You know, it's like that.
Let's do the recipe.
All right. Okay. Start out for retro turkey loaf with one medium red onion.
A medium red onion.
And you could really use any onion. The red is for color. But I'm interested in color. Don't you think color is important?
Yeah,
it
kind of is.
I mean, when you're looking at stuff, you want it to, seriously, you want it to be appetizing looking no matter what it tastes like.
Do we just stick the onion somewhere or do we do something to
it? We're going
to
dice it.
Oh, okay.
Dice it. All right. One medium green pepper. We're also going to dice it.
A medium green pepper.
Now, it's a large dice that you want to do. I got a new set of knives because we had a good friend who came up from Chicago and she writes cookbooks. She is dynamite. She looked at my knives, and she said, your knives are not the best. Not the best. So over a period now of a couple of weeks, I've managed to purchase new knives over the net. Mm-hmm. They're wonderful. They have one disadvantage. You know what that disadvantage is?
You get cut.
That's right, because they're sharp. Some are bigger, some are smaller. It seems like I've got Band-Aids today. I just have one. But look at this. I'm continuously cutting myself. So I'm debating.
But I have a question before we go on. Did you steal some recipes from her that we can pass along?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
yes,
good.
She has great recipes. Okay, 2 pounds of lean ground turkey.
2 pounds of lean ground turkey.
Now, the type of turkey you get can make a difference because there's dark meat and there's white meat. And dark meat has more oil in it and it's going to be more caloric, but I find it tastier. And white meat has much less. And most turkey is sort of in between. So read the label. Pure white meat won't have any fat in it, so you want to have at least a mixture.
Yeah.
1/2 cup of tomato sauce.
1/2 cup of tomato sauce.
1/2 cup of breadcrumbs.
1/2 cup of breadcrumbs.
Now, the best breadcrumbs you can buy that I like now are Panko, P-A-N-K-O. It's not a brand. Mm. It's a type of breadcrumb. And if you've ever had tempura at a restaurant, have you ever had tempura, Tom?
I don't think so.
You know, Tom, you are not an adventurous eater. I mean, I'm just shocked because I thought you were an adventurous eater when you went out to eat and
you
would
have some. interesting
some
stuff.
Some adventures. Yeah. I mean, I know you're not into, like, insects and those other things that he...
What's
but,
his name? Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, yeah. eating that stuff. No. But panko is a Japanese prepared mm-hmm. breadcrumb, and it's wonderful because it's a crispy breadcrumb. So throw out your old breadcrumbs and only use panko, P-A-N-K-O. I'm serious. My friend who came up with the knives, she threw out the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Threw them out, and now we only have panko. And you know what? I feel better about things.
Well, good.
One large egg white.
A large egg white.
2 tablespoonfuls of brown mustard.
2 big tea, brown mustard.
2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea, olive oil.
1 teaspoon of Worcestershire sauce.
A little tea Worcestershire sauce.
Now, I have it on good advice from one of my patients who's from the UK mm-hmm. that they don't pronounce it Worcestershire sauce over there. They pronounce it...
Like it's spelled Worcestershire.
Worcestershire sauce. They say it's Worcestershire sauce.
Okay.
So we've obviously, you know, we've done a slang word to it.
Because none of us could pronounce it.
Worcestershire is it's too hard to get around your mouth. A teaspoon of garlic salt.
Little tea garlic salt.
Okay, now, 1/2 teaspoon of salt and 1/2 teaspoon of white pepper.
1/2 tea salt and 1/2 tea white pepper.
And white pepper has, it has a slightly different taste from black pepper. Black pepper is okay. White pepper is a little fuller taste.
You think you could pass a taste test if somebody did it?
With white and black pepper? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't done that. Have you ever tried that?
No, I don't.
But... Hey, it's in the recipe. Who am I to argue?
Right.
You might argue from the recipe. I think the reason you use white pepper is that you don't have these black things. I think it's a visual thing. Back to that. Seriously.
Could be.
1/4 teaspoon of cumin.
1/4 little tea cumin.
I always buy my cumin from a Mexican or Asian grocery stores because mm-hmm. it is 1/4 of the price. Mm-hmm. And 1/2 cup of ketchup.
1/2 cup of ketchup.
What's your favorite ketchup?
I don't have a favorite.
Absolutely.
I don't
Heinz
even like
or
ketchup.
Hunt's. You don't like ketchup?
No.
Oh, I love ketchup.
No.
Heinz or Hunt's. Those are my two favorite. And frankly, I like Heinz, but I think it's because of the bottle. Because Hunt's is also
Well,
quite
those
good.
Are the only two kinds of ketchup.
No, there is generic. Have you ever tried generic ketchup? It's pretty yucky. Generic ketchup is not good. Okay, let's make it. Preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Then spray a nonstick skillet with non-fat cooking spray. Over medium-high heat, sauté the onion and pepper for 5 minutes until it's soft. Then, in a large bowl, mix ground turkey breast, cooked onions, peppers, tomato sauce, breadcrumbs, egg white, mustard, olive oil, Worcestershire sauce. Hey, my grandparents were English on one side.
Okay.
Worcestershire sauce, garlic, salt, regular salt, white pepper, and cumin. Spread the mixture into a loaf and place on the greased baking sheet. Spread the ketchup over the top of the loaf. Bake for 50 minutes until done. And then you've got to let it stand for like 10 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Tent it with some tin foil because then the oil will go back in there. Once again, you're going to use, if you want to, turkey breast meat, but if you don't like the taste of that, you could use the mixture of dark meat and white meat, and that will have a little bit more oil mm-hmm. to it. Not many calories, 225 calories per serving, most of it obviously coming from the fat that's in the turkey. But it's really a heart-healthy recipe, and it's really very good.
Yeah, and I can see why listeners liked it so much, because
it
sounds yummy to me.
They did, yeah. and it's a good way. It's a comfort food, and I think when the nights get longer and the days get shorter – we need comfort food. We need comfort food. I mean, that's
and when the days dwindle down to a precious few.
That's very good. Are you going to sing next on the zone? I love it. That's good.
If there's a recipe you forgot to jot down or that's back in style, let us know about it, and it might just end up being our next recipe from the
vault.
Like that. Simply send the name of the recipe in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor On Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org. And remember, you can find us on Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Huntsville, Alabama. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have a gallbladder that is only functioning at 38%, and it is my feeling that the H. pylori that I had 4 years ago from symptoms is coming back as well. Now, because of it, I'm curious if that is what is causing the acid reflux. And if I have my gallbladder removed, will that help, do you think, with the acid reflux?
First of all, you've got a bit of a complexity to the case, but it's not an uncommon problem where people will have abdominal pain and they'll say, gee, is this from my acid reflux or is this from my gallbladder? Or is it from both?
Uh-huh.
So it can be A, it can be B, or it can be a combination of A and B.
All of the above.
All of the above. Yeah. So it
okay.
can be all of them. First of all, let's talk about H. pylori. H. pylori, of course, is what causes many ulcers. It's an infection. We used to think ulcers were caused by stress. They are not caused by stress. They're caused by H. pylori, which is an infection, or they're caused by anti-inflammatory drugs, including aspirin. One of the reasons why ulcers were very, very common back in the 60s was the anti-inflammatories people took were aspirin. Aspirin under a different name. Aspirin under the name of Anacin, aspirin under the name of Bufferin, and aspirin under the name of aspirin. And so they had lots of ulcers from that. And H. pylori is an infection. Cure rate, 80 to 90%. If you feel like it's coming back, take the cure again. That's what I would do. Call up your doctor and say, I think it's coming back, and your doc will either say, we want to do a test, or if your doc is like me, they'll say, why don't we just treat you again because you
okay.
had it before. And I would automatically do that again because you may indeed have acid reflux. So I would do that. I'd put myself on a proton pump inhibitor such as Prevacid, which is now over-the-counter, Protonix, which is over-the-counter, and Prilosec, which is over-the-counter. Do not spend money on Nexium. You don't need something expensive. Double the dose on the over-the-counter stuff if it doesn't work. That's what I would do first. Now, gallbladder disease, often it's a crampy, different pain for people. And they said you have sludge, or what did they say? You
sludge.
Said,
it's mm-hmm. It's just not working properly. And mm-hmm. I'm just curious, can I heal it? Can I make it work better? Or
do I
have to have it removed?
Yeah, nobody ever wants to have their gallbladder removed. I haven't had anyone who came into my office and said, rip out my gallbladder. I want to have it removed. If it were me, so first of all, I want to know, they did a test, they injected you with a dye, did some x-ray tests, is that what they did?
Absolutely.
Okay, so they looked at the function of the gallbladder. First thing I would do is I would treat the acid reflux. Because
okay.
I'd want to know, is my pain from gallbladder or acid reflux? Treat it. H. pylori, full antibiotic treatment for 14 days, double strength on the PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, Zantac 300 milligrams at bedtime. Treat that for 4 to 6 weeks. See what happens to your pain.
Okay, 4 to 6 weeks.
I would do it. After I had the antibiotics, I would wait another probably month or so. Because when you're on the antibiotics, usually you're treated with a proton pump inhibitor. There's one treatment called a PrevPak, PrevPak, which is a combination of a clarithromycin, which is an antibiotic, and a proton pump inhibitor. So it's one of the treatments. But I would treat that for 4 to 6 weeks and see what happens to your pain. If your pain goes away, hey, maybe your gallbladder really isn't the issue. Now, can you heal your gallbladder? No. But is your gallbladder causing your pain? Maybe not. And if you don't have pain from your gallbladder, you don't have to have it removed.
Okay, because I don't have pain. That my biggest thing, as I said, is the acid reflux.
Right.
And I want that
treat the acid reflux, and then, as I said, treat the acid reflux and keep the gallbladder.
I like that a bunch.
Good.
That's my thought, too.
Thank you for your call.
And I appreciate your advice.
Thanks. You're welcome.
And before we close out our recipe segment, Zorba, let's log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for a listener tip from Ellen, who, you're going to love this, claims she was your ballroom dance teacher. Once upon a time.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Penny and I took ballroom dancing from Ellen. You know, I always wonder what happened to Ellen. Now I know. She's listening to the radio.
I've got to get that picture out of my mind. Zorba Pastor, ballroom dancing.
With my wife. With my wife, 25 years ago. Ellen Krupa. That was her last name, Krupa. Or maybe Krupa's kind of a... Isn't Krupa the name of a band leader?
Yeah, Gene Krupa was a famous drummer with Benny Goodman.
I think her name was Ellen Krupa. I'm going to think of it as Ellen Krupa. I might be wrong.
Yeah. If you get a call from ABC, it could be Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, I never thought about that. You know, if we had continued with that, I would have been on Dancing with the Stars.
Maybe still. Ellen writes, I thought you might like to know another way to remove the liquid from frozen spinach. Although I do this for cooked spinach, I'm sure it would work for frozen as well. Here's what I do. One, using two dinner plates, or two, not too deep soup or pasta bowls with rims, place thawed spinach on the first plate or bowl. Two, place the second plate or bowl over the spinach and first plate or bowl so that they nest together. The face of the second or top plate or bowl will be facing up with nothing on it.
Uh-huh.
Then three, pick up the two plates or bowls and walk to the kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
And four, holding the two plates or bowls together, turn them so the rim edges are facing down and press, press it to allow the spinach liquid to drip into the sink.
Uh-huh.
Keep pressing until no more liquid escapes between the rims.
I'm just trying to picture this. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it sounds great.
You're basically doing it between the two. But you have to be careful because if you press it too hard, you might break the bowls.
Yeah.
I can just picture myself pushing and trying to get that water out, and all of a sudden I'm cracking the bowls. But it's a very good idea.
Yeah.
I don't mean to really laugh at it.
Yeah.
I think it's good. Because right now when I want to get rid of water in spinach, I'm actually pushing down on paper towels, and it's very messy.
It sounds like a neat idea.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah.
And you know what? She's right, but there's only one thing wrong with it. You don't want to walk over to the sink. You want to dance to the sink.
Only if you're Zorba and Penny. Well, it takes two to tango, so Zorba can't help you if you don't send in your lifestyle questions. Just make sure to send it to the show in an email, too.
Zorba at WPR.org.
Well, we have some more interesting research coming up, some more of your interesting phone calls, and a really interesting medical myth buster. Hang around here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doctor Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, it is research time. And I have never thought of cancer as being a transmissible disease. So what's this all about?
Well, and actually we have a number of cancers that are transmissible. There's something called Burkitt's lymphoma, which is a type of lymphoma initially found in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. And that was the first transmissible cancer that was found. That was found back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Burkitt was an epidemiologist, and he looked at the way it developed and said these are transmissible. Now we know, for instance, that cervical cancer is caused by human papillomavirus. Human papillomavirus is a transmissible virus for people who have sex. And they have sex from one person to another. They transmit the virus. A certain number of those viral infections then actually become cancer. And so we now screen for human papillomavirus if there is an abnormal pap smear. We do other screens to see. Well, it turns out human papillomavirus, which is HPV, those are the initials, number 16, there are different types, is also responsible for throat cancer. And throat cancer, although it is much, much less common than lung cancer, number one, colon cancer, breast cancer, and cervical cancer, throat cancer is becoming more common. It increased from 0.8 cases per 100,000, in other words, roughly a case in 100,000 per year, not much, to 2.6. But it's on the rise, and it's on the rise because of oral sex. In other words, the human papillomavirus, which then comes into contact when you're having sex with the tissues in the back of the mouth, which can be very fragile, can actually cause an infection there that leads to cancer.
Mm.
And I think it's important for younger people to know that because a lot of younger people think that oral sex is safer than intercourse. And the reality is STDs are STDs are STDs.
Yeah. Well, so should we react to this as a society?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it's important to get the word out that indeed, if you're not using protection and you're having oral sex and you happen to have a sexually transmitted disease, for instance, gonorrhea and syphilis, mm-hmm. years ago when they're around, they can also be spread orally. So I think people have to know that and take protection. Looking at the HPV issue with cancer, it's important that young people especially get immunized with the HPV vaccine. Yeah. I think that's a very important thing.
We should just think of this in the same terms of sexual behavior and sexually transmitted
disease. Absolutely. It's a sexually transmitted disease. It's a cancer that is caused as a sexually transmitted disease. We can get rid of it by being immunized against this virus. And to me, it makes absolute sense for every woman who is up, I believe, to the age of 24, I can't remember exactly what the numbers are, to think about immunization with the HPV vaccine. Get it done.
800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener now in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I have a situation where I have been fighting allergies for about 47 years.
You've been fighting it without stop? Or?
Pretty much nonstop.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
I've been to two or three different allergy clinics, and they all do basically the same thing. They run a series of tests up and down the arms and on the back. They have pretty well concluded that I am allergic to grass, trees, and mold, and weeds. So it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's unique, about mine is I live, like I said, in Salt Lake City, and there's a lot of snow, and I'm still plagued by it, even in the wintertime.
Right, right. Allergies. That's quite interesting. People with allergies used to move out to Phoenix, and they'd say, you know, you live in the Midwest, go out to Phoenix, you won't get any allergies. Well, guess what? After you're there for 5 or 10 years, you become allergic to the dust and everything that's around you, even the minimal pollen, and that's what goes on. And you may be allergic to some of the allergens that are in your house, not just, you know, and that's why you said, you know, Salt Lake City is dry. And it's crisp, and yet there are still things in the air that you're allergic to. What do you take for your allergies?
I take a variety of different sprays, and I don't take them all at once, but I fluctuate through Flonase, Ipratropium, Afrin, Nasalex, Panatese. Mm-hmm. Those are just the sprays, and then I take a variety of medications like the antihistamines, and that type of thing.
So looking at this, what happens is Flonase is a steroid nasal spray. Ipratropium is Atrovent. It's a drying spray that's in there. So those are very good sprays to use. Afrin, you don't want to use it for more than a day or two. That's over the counter, and you can get Rebound. I have a couple of recommendations, and it's very tough. You've got a tough case, first of all. So if you can get rid of some of your allergies, that would be useful. I first of all think the steroids are a great drug, and I would take two puffs twice a day of the steroid nasal spray that you're doing. And I would combine that with the Ipratropium, which is Atrovent spray, and I would use that to the maximal dose. That's what I would do. From an antihistamine point of view, I would take Benadryl at bedtime, 25 to 50 milligrams. See if you tolerate it. It can have a hangover because people get tired from it. It's what's used with over-the-counter. I would definitely take Benadryl at bedtime. During the daytime, I would go to Zyrtec or Allegra, which is a daytime antihistamine. And then if you tolerate it, there are a number of drugs in the singular class that are not there. I would add one of those drugs too. And that's what I would do. I would give it the full court press by hitting all the different areas that are there. And finally, I would add Zantac to this. Zantac is an H2 blocker, and it's different from an antihistamine, but it shares some of the same qualities. It is an antihistamine for H2, and I would take 300 milligrams of Zantac twice daily along with this, and just see if you can get that under control. Then I would check your house. I'd look for mold in the house, you know, and I assume you've done that after 35 or 40 years.
Yeah.
You're probably done.
And the answer is yes.
Good luck to you. Let us know what happens.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call. Zorba time once again now for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today from Grandin in West Lafayette, Indiana, that deals with a popular food additive. Grandin writes, I'm contacting you to see if you have any insight into MSG. There are a large amount of publications on the internet that talk about it causing death in laboratory rats and linking it to ADD, ADHD, Asperger's syndrome, and autism. Is there any truth to any of this?
No, most of it is just junk and garbage. You know, it's like there's the anti-MSG movement. And I'll tell you, I don't know where it came from, but I know what, you know, what people mostly complain about mm-hmm. with MSG. First of all, MSG is natural. It's produced by certain foods, but it's often used as an additive in Chinese food. And it's been used for many, many years. You know, it's a many, many years. And it produces a full taste called umami that the Chinese and Japanese frankly love. There's been researchers looking at food that has MSG in it, MSG not in it, double-blind placebo-controlled trials where half the food has MSG and half the food does not. And unlike salt, you often can't tell the difference. And they found that they cannot reproduce the symptoms that many people have with MSG. In other words, when they actually put them in a lab, people cannot tell the difference, and they have symptoms with a lot of food that's Chinese that doesn't have MSG and other foods that's often Chinese that does. The bottom line that I have is there are people who say, I know I'm MSG intolerant, and there's something about the food that's made at that restaurant. Now, it might be the MSG, and it might be the other spices, or it might be the combination. So I think you just have to look at what it is and then make a decision for yourself. But it doesn't cause autism. It doesn't cause Asperger's. It doesn't cause anything else. You'd think somebody was making money off the MSG scare. But I think for some people, it does cause some nausea and discomfort, and those people should stay away from foods that happen.
But not those kinds of serious things.
I don't think there's any serious thing caused by MSG at all. I think they're minor. Once again, the studies, the placebo-controlled trials didn't show it, but people really say, I don't care what the trials say, it makes a difference. Yeah. Stay away from that food.
Mm-hmm. Have a myth you'd like us to bust? Just send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I have a 4-year-old daughter, and we've been dealing with this for the better part of 10 months. She has allergies, and that leads to either an ear infection or nearly an ear infection. And her adenoids swell, and she can't hear very well. And she takes a teaspoon and a half of children's Zyrtec every day, and her pediatrician has put her on, it's an inhaler that he has put a bottle nipple on the end of and cut the end off of, and we have to put this inhaler up her nose once a day. It's Qvar.
Uh-huh.
And then when it starts to turn into an ear infection, he puts her on antibiotics. But it does clear it up, but then once we've done one or two rounds of antibiotics, it comes back fairly quickly. And we are actually going to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist today, in fact.
Have you put Qvar in all the time in between times that she gets sick?
No, I think I'm probably supposed to, but she absolutely hates it. So.
Because that might be the answer. The answer is to do that. How old is she again?
She's four.
Well, you know, sometimes if you sweeten it, kids will do it. Like, here's Qvar. I'm going to give you a couple of M&Ms. I'm serious. I'm not against bribing my children. In fact, I have four perfect children, and I ascribe it to the fact that we would bribe them. They were not, oh, you're going to get a Porsche because you did well in school. But sometimes a little candy, you know, sweetness makes the medicine go down. And that's what I would do, because sometimes a steroid inhaler and their other inhalers can often make the difference and just keep the passages open. So that's kind of one of the things I would say, and I would have her look at that. Kids don't like nasal sprays, and sometimes it's very hard to get them to do it, but you can often do that. And that's what I would think about. You know, you're going to see the ear, nose, and throat doctor and see that. I think it's an inflammation issue, and if you could get the inflammation down, that would make the difference. She's on a good antihistamine, so good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. Before we leave for the week, Zorba, we have a small matter to deal with from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. I'm pretty sure this might be a repeat offense. It comes to us from Proud Deputy Jan in Kewaskum, Wisconsin, who has reached the end of her rope.
What? Wait, what's the name of the town?
Kewaskum. You don't know Kewaskum?
I don't know Kewaskum from anything.
You've only been here for 100 years.
That's
how
right.
would you know?
Kewaskum.
A major
of course.
Metropolis
it's
a in
major,
Wisconsin.
The major metropolis of Kewaskum.
She says she's reached the end of her rope with one of your speech habits. Jane writes, as an avid listener, I've been tuning into your program for over a decade. I would like to point out an error I've heard you make many times, calling the adrenaline response the flight or fright response. Its accurate name is the fight or flight response. This is the response that would cause one to, in a life-threatening situation, either flee or turn and fight. It probably goes back to prehistoric times when our ancestors encountered a saber-toothed tiger and had to make the choice to fight the animal or turn and run like hell. Fight or flight.
Uh-huh. Well, I
fright,
was,
fright
I,
is involved, I, involved probably in both of them, but it's not in the phrase.
I respectfully disagree. First of all, there is no there is no absolute verified, like, the name of a medication that this is what it is. And I call it flight or fright. And you know what? I probably will continue to do it.
Yeah. Even
She's
though,
right. It could
even
be
though,
flight.
Even though every other human That's being right. on That's earth right. has That's it right.
right. It could be
right
flight.
Is it could, flight
it,
or
– It could be flight, fright, or fight response.
No, but
now,
see, the reason – let me try and explain this. The reason fright doesn't work is because fright is involved in both of those activities.
That's true.
Not one
That's
or
true.
The other.
That's true.
Fight is
That's
one
true.
Thing. Flight That's, is another thing. Fright goes with both of them. Thus, is inappropriate to use in that phrase.
I got it. Did you write this and then you put it under a different name? That's what it is.
You're accusing.
I don't have that.
I'm not.
You're the chief deputy.
I'm, not
I'm trying
in,
for
I'm
years
not
to
in
figure
Kewaskum.
Out what it is.
Don't
no,
blame
no,
me.
No. You're the grammar police. I've been trying for years to figure out what it is.
Busted. If you want to join the fight against Zorba's grammar mistakes, then join the Zorba Pastor and your health grammar police. You can do so by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org and them's fighting words.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Executive producer Adam Friedrich and technical director Brad Kohlberg, who are also the two finalists to replace Andy Rooney. Brad says, you know what I hate? Hosts that don't talk into microphones. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran.
That's
for Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark. Hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1013Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.